Welcome to PCMC and Happy New Year. Let's hope 2021 is, it's got to be better than 2020, right? Unless, like, this is the year that finally, like, zombies happen. All you little fanboys, you've been talking about it for years. This is the year of the zombies. But hopefully, seriously, that it is a much better year. And being that it is the new year, the new year means two things. Honeymooners and the Twilight Zone. I'm joined today by Vin Forte.
Oh, that's me.
Yes, sir.
Oh, my God. Yeah, the Honeymooners, Twilight Zone.
Yes.
I don't think there's any other. Wasn't there another marathon? Or am I thinking of, am I misremembering something?
I was recently on the Instagram, and a person much younger than me said the Odd Couple marathon.
Really?
Yeah. And this is like a kid in their 20s. And I was just like, all right. I don't even remember that being a thing.
No, they're referring to the Matthew Perry, Thomas Lennon Odd Couple.
Oh, God. speaking of the Twilight Zone, there's got to be a universe where that is the thing, where it's like, oh, it's, we're bringing in the new year. Somebody put on the Odd Couple with Thomas Lennon.
You never know where he's going to show. He'll show up in Batman. He'll show up in the Odd Couple.
I only watched a couple episodes of this, but apparently that Lethal Weapon TV show, Thomas Lennon played Leo Getz, the character played on the silver screen by Joe Pesci.
Really?
Yeah. So
quite a different direction.
You know what? I agree.
Didn't that show also, like, didn't they get rid of the lead character?
Oh, yeah. Basically, the guy who played Riggs was very difficult to work with, so I think they fired him. And they did that thing where instead of recasting him, they just brought in a new character that had a new name but was the exact same thing. So it was the same dynamic.
Well, that's unfortunate.
You know, today we're going to talk about The Twilight Zone. Because, you know what I love about The Twilight Zone, Vin? The Twilight Zone Marathon was such a cool thing because The Twilight Zone is so existential. And I think that's such a cool headspace to begin a year with. Like, you know, you had Chris. I remember being a kid, you had Christmas and all the Christmassy things. And then, you know, you had that week of playing with your new toys. And here comes fucking New Year's Eve and we're going to start a new year. And how about just hours upon hours of black and white melancholy? What the fuck does it all mean?
We're just going to mind fuck you. Like, you had your fun.
Yeah.
Christmas is over. And now it's like, okay, the new year's beginning. You're going to have like a month of, statistically the most depressing month of the year.
Yeah.
And right before that hits, we're gonna make you question everything.
Yeah. Hey, little kid. Hey, Mike. Hey, little Mike in 1989. Put down that Batmobile toy. And I want you to think about whether or not maybe you're the alien. And
yeah, you ever think about the concept of time? We invented it.
Hey, Mike, put down those New Adventures of He-Man figures. And I want you to think about racism for a second.
Yeah. Yeah, you like the ball drop? Well, great. Here, let's talk about race. Let's do it.
Let's talk about beauty. It's in the eye of the beholder, young man.
Yeah, I hope you like weird. You were about to go to sleep.
Yeah.
But not anymore after seeing those pig faces.
I see you're enjoying your Pee-wee's Playhouse play set. I see a little cherry over there. But how about you think about what happens?
Guess what? Gender is a construct.
What happens when you take a train that takes you to hell? Or whatever the fuck happens.
Was that an actual episode? A train takes you to hell?
No, it's not hell. It's like the afterlife or something, right?
I don't know. Oh, yeah.
So I'm actually, I think I'd call myself averagely versed in the Twilight Zone. I'm not one of these people that have watched them all. I keep telling myself I'm going to do a rewatch and it hasn't happened yet. But of course I have my favorite episodes and the ones that stick out. I know you like Twilight Zone. So I said, I wanted you to give a suggestion and you gave a really good suggestion. You actually suggested an original series episode, but then it's sort of remake in the 80s series.
Yeah, the episode from the original series is a kind of stopwatch, which is basically, it's a good episode, but it's also like a very typical Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, it doesn't get at anything. Like the remake one from the 80s gets at something, at least.
Yeah, the original one is basically your typical, like, guy finds a device that changes his world, and then he gets a little too in over his head and pushes his luck, and then, oh, he's stuck in a weird Twilight Zone.
Yeah, it's in some ways similar to, like, the Burgess Meredith one, the one where, like, he's a reader, and then his glasses break. It kind of reminded me of that. Like, it's like, oh, it's a put-upon loser, and he kind of gets his wish, and it, of course, it doesn't work out. It's a lesser episode. It actually
is a memorable episode. I think people, like, remember the gimmick.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's from the fifth season. It actually aired originally on October 18th, 1963. A kind of a stopwatch. It's episode 4 of season 5, the last of the original seasons. And, you know, when I was watching it, I kept saying, this lead character looks so fucking familiar. Who is this lead character? And then I found it. Did you find it? You know,
no.
Who it is? He's Leonard from Community.
Oh my God.
Leonard from Community, if you've never watched Community, is he's like the super, the joke is like in community colleges, you always have the older students. He's like the super, super, super old student. So like whenever they're getting the hijinks, there's just an old man there. Famously, Jeff Winger was like, we're not the little rascals. And then Leonard was like, I was. So that dude plays the lead character of this episode, McNulty, just much, much younger, which is why my brain couldn't put it together. Because it's like, I know that face. So Vin, tell us about McNulty.
Okay, so Leonard.
For now on, we'll be called Leonard.
Yeah, so Leonard basically, they should remake that episode with him now as the Leonard character.
You think Dan Harmon would just like pester him about it on set?
Oh, like, God, I'm
sure. What was Rod Serling like?
What was it like playing with that freeze time watch?
Yeah.
Was it real?
What was with that secretary, huh? Was she really a bitch?
But basically, so there's a guy, he pitches bad ideas at his job. He's like a go-getter, but he pitches all these bad ideas, and eventually his boss is just like, you know, enough with these bad ideas. So he comes at him with one more, and it's the result of him basically coming into contact with this like stopwatch.
Yeah.
Well, he finds this stopwatch and basically can freeze time. So the first half of the episode is him trying to explain to people how it works, but you can't really explain it to people because when you freeze time, they're frozen too.
Right, exactly.
So like how do you get around that? And right. He can't. So right. And eventually his boss is like, this is the dumbest idea I've ever seen.
Right.
Like, you're fired. And then he goes and does typical Twilight Zone hijinks with it. He goes outside. They do a lot of interesting, and they do it more so in the 80s version, but
yeah.
Even in this one, they do like some good, I don't know if you'd call it stop motion, but like freeze motion, I guess, where everyone literally just has to stand still.
The 80s version does a lot of cool things like, you know, pouring orange juice and the orange juice is frozen. But in the 50s one, there's a lot of good acting. And I was like, I kept watching to see if like somebody fucked up. And really, you don't get that. They must have really like set out the casting notice for, okay, bring in all your actors who can stand really fucking still to come audition for this episode. Because there are whole scenes where people are just like perfectly frozen.
Oh, yeah. Like not moving. Like normally when they do stuff like that in the 50s and 60s, you could see people like naturally shaking a little bit.
Right.
But you don't see that here, which is nice.
No, it's really good.
But then basically the episode ends when he goes to like rob a bank because right. He's like, ah, fuck this. I'm just going to go steal money now. And he is like on his way out of the bank and he knocks over the stopwatch.
Yeah.
And obviously now he doesn't know how to fix it. He broke it.
Right.
And now he's just like in this world where time is frozen. He's the only man basically alive.
Right. Which
I also want to point out, because this is going to become more relevant when we talk about the 80s one, this is more like a comical fate because it's like he's just, he can still go around places. He can cook. Like, it's going to be a weird, boring existence, but like, he can make do.
Yeah, it's, I would put this into that category of the more comedic Twilight Zone episodes. They hired a guy, Leonard, who clearly is doing a comedic performance. There are some funny bits in the episode. Like, he works for like a woman's lingerie company, And they don't tell you that at first. So he comes in and he's like, I got all these great ideas, boss. How about you make hot dogs that are flat so you could put them on a hamburger bun? And the boss is like, we are an underwear company.
Yeah.
How many times do I have to tell you we don't work in food? Why do you have all these ideas that have nothing to do with what this company does? And even like when he first starts like playing with the watch, there's a kind of funny montage of like famous footage, like starting and stopping, like that famous footage of like the black and white footage of like a little propeller plane going through a house. You've probably seen it a million times. Like it's just stock footage of like it's a little shack and then a little like looks like a fucking Wright Brothers propeller plane drives right through it. And, you know, they play with that. You see it like almost hit the house and then they stop it. They freeze it. And they do this thing where like whenever something's frozen, the soundtrack does a kind of like tick tock, tick tock. And then they unfreeze it and it goes through the house. So like they're clearly playing there's jokes in there.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of it's an episode that's their excuse to do a lot of like visual gags.
Yeah.
Let their hair down a little, be funny. Like you said, you don't realize that he's working for an underwear company, which is right. Typical Leonard.
Oh, fucking Leonard. Also, Leonard has a creepy relationship with the secretary of his boss, who he's kind of like, hey, honey, you want to go out on a date? And she's like, there's only two ways I would go on a date with you. If you were the last man on Earth and or something else. And she was like, you're neither of them. And, you know, it's typical 50s. So there's no such thing as consent. So he's like, right. I'll get you soon. I'll get you one of these days.
I'll show you. I will be the last man on Earth. See, like
he reminded me a little bit of Gil from the
Simpsons. Oh, from the Simpsons.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does have that like desperation.
Yeah.
Like, oh well, Gil's gonna get a sale one of these days at cha-cha. Like
he's a loser, but he's still a man in a suit.
Right. He thinks he's gonna be a big shot, but he's not.
Right. He's an idea man. Like his sort of catchphrase is he like gives you some nonsense idea and goes, You think about that, but it's like some stupid idea. Let's talk for a second about the bar. Like other than The Office, the other big reoccurring set is the bar. And he goes into this bar that's like his normal neighborhood bar, but everybody fucking hates him.
Yeah, like I don't know why he keeps going back to this bar.
He walks in and the bartender clearly is like, fucking Leonard's here.
Yeah. Probably gonna tell me about his hot dog idea again.
Yeah. And he just talks people's ear off. Like they're watching a baseball game and he's fucking telling them how baseball sucks and soccer's a better fucking sport. And he's right, but that's not fucking appropriate for the setting. Right. And you know, the guys who fucking are drinking there all like just leave. He like clears the place out, which is why the bartender hates him because he's like ruining his business.
But the bar is also a great setting where they get to do a lot of freezy shit.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, like when he goes in there to try to tell, it's sort of sad because it's like, does he think these are his friends? He goes into this bar to try to tell them about the watch. He's like, fellas, let me tell you about this watch I found. And they're all like, oh, fuck off, McNulty. Go kill yourself.
Yeah, in every single scene, he seems to think that everyone's his friend. Like, right. No one at the office likes him.
Right.
But he's like trying to get coffee with them anyway.
Right. Nobody likes him. Like it's fantastic. And like he goes into the bar to tell his friends what happened. And then he's like, I'll show you. And he stops time and he like switches people's drinks and he fucks with one guy's hair and he kind of moves around. And like the only way he can really, he never, I think, accurately convinces anybody of it. But the way that he could is just to appear in different places.
Right. Or be like, hey, you're holding that drink.
Right.
Stare at it. Look at it. Right. Now when I unfreeze time, you're going to, in the blink of an eye, have a completely different drink.
Right. He doesn't do that though.
No, he doesn't do any of that. Like he could have done that. He could have been like, you're inside. What you're going to blink and now you're going to be outside.
Right. Right. Which is something they do in the 80s version. The protagonist in that will freeze people and like move them.
Right.
McNulty or Leonard, when he first gets it, his first instinct is, oh, this is the big idea that'll make me rich, which I don't get.
Yeah, I don't quite, like, it's a thing. I mean, it's a crazy thing to stumble upon, but right. Like, I don't know how you mass produce and market that.
Yeah, and even if you could mass produce magic stopwatches, like, how could the world have them? Like, what would happen to time and space?
Right.
If more than one person had the magic stopwatch that stops time. Also, what is it good for? But, you know, he's a down on his luck loser. So it's like, this is his big break, kind of. What I'm interested in that is underdeveloped in the episode is the guy who gives him the stopwatch, because he doesn't just find it. It's gifted to him by this man drinking alone in the bar. He's the last person in the bar. Leonard made everyone else leave. And he's like, oh, you'll be my friend. And then he just drinks with this guy. And the guy's kind of got like a European accent. It's not quite clear where he's from, but he's not American. And it's underdeveloped. Like, what is this, like your Twilight Zone demon in disguise? Is this a guy who, does the guy know that it's magic? Like, why would he give it up?
That's whenever because the Twilight Zone would do this kind of stuff often, where they would have to have some moment where the MacGuffin gets passed off to the new red-headed rube.
Right, exactly.
And, like, this is a clear case of that moment. And in most of those situations, I always assumed that the person who had it used it and, like, learned a lesson from it. And now is like, oh, well, this is too... I realize now this is too dangerous. I should just give this to someone else. Mm. But I will concede that logic is really flawed, because it's like, oh, now you're just going to give it to some new guy who's going to fuck with time.
Right. Why not just throw it into the ocean? Like, by the way, this guy is drinking alone and he looks kind of sad. So you're like, okay, maybe he's abused the stopwatch and now he lives a sad existence. But, you know, here he is in this bar drinking, and like, it takes about a 5-minute conversation before he gives it to Leonard. Like, it doesn't take a lot for him to be like, hey, this is a family heirloom. Take it. Bye.
Yeah. Here's my magic stopwatch.
Yeah. So, like you said, it ends with, it's not a huge twist, because especially this is season 5 of The Twilight Zone. By this point, I'm sure the audience knew what was going to happen. Like, oh, he's going to fucking break this thing and be stuck. And that's what happens. But what's interesting is to think about where he is, because it's like, does he not exist now? Is he like Clara Oswald from Doctor Who? Is he just in between time? Does he age? Will he die naturally? Or is he just forever going to be there?
I don't know. I mean,
this is what little fucking 4-year-old me had to think about on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he screwed over the rest of the world.
Right.
And now just lives this existence where, I mean, he could do whatever he wants. I mean, laws do not apply to him anymore.
Do you think he screwed over the rest of the world? Or do you think...
You think he's in his own little pocket of time?
Right. I don't know, though. You're right. Maybe all of existence stops. Well, he doesn't experiment with it as much as I would.
No. And the big conceit with the Twilight Zone, I think, is it always seems that even though they're individual stories, they sort of set this framework of the person in the story has somehow, like through cosmic means, like passed into the Twilight Zone. So like their reality is not our reality.
Right. It's just constant what ifs.
Yeah.
So that's the first episode. It's pretty entertaining. Leonard has a good performance. You know, the dirty thing that would popped into my mind, and I'm sure would pop into anyone's mind, is all the sexual things you could do with it, which obviously in the 50s doesn't come up, but actually does come up in the 80s version.
Yeah.
Do you want to move on to the 80s version?
Yeah, the 80s version was called A Little Peace and Quiet.
It's actually the 80s versions were hour long and would have two stories an episode. So it's the first episode, but the second story.
Yeah, and it was directed by Wes Craven.
Yes, it was. And it was, it stars Melinda Dillon, who's
the mom from A Christmas Story.
Exactly. Who, by the way, I don't know what she was doing or what Wes Craven was telling her to do, but she plays this role with a real odd sexual energy.
Really?
Don't you think so? Like, when she starts stopping time.
Oh, yeah. She's, like, loving it.
Yeah, it's like orgasmic to her. Like, she's like, she gets up super close into her husband's face like she's going to kiss him. It's weird.
Yeah, now that you bring it up, like, there is a lot of, like she's seduced by it. She's seduced by the power of having...
Right.
Of having the stopwatch or the amulet thing.
Right. And they have two different scenarios where Leonard is just this down on his luck guy who wants to, like, I don't know, make it big in business. But
she Penny, just plays a mom,
right,
who just, like, needs a fucking moment.
Yeah, she's got four kids. Each one of them sucks more than the last.
Her husband sucks.
Her husband's a big fucking baby. You know, it's that constant, hey, honey, where's my tie? Hey, honey, at one point he's going out to play softball on a weeknight.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about.
I don't know what that's about either, but it's fucking, I wouldn't accept it. So he sucks. The washing machine is fucking broke. You know what I mean? Like, everything sucks. Everything's loud. You know, the kids are screaming. At one point, her son finds a dead fucking snake outside and pranks his sisters with it. And then decides, let's prank mom with it, and puts it on the fucking breakfast griddle next to the bacon and eggs. It's disgusting.
Son of a bitch. What are you, like?
You ruined everyone's breakfast, you fuck. And Penny turns around and all four of her children are laughing at her. Like, ha ha ha, we got you, mom. It's like, you know, well, this was your fucking breakfast. Well, fuck y'all.
Yeah, now you don't get breakfast.
It's typical 1980s commentary about life is too fast now.
Yeah.
Right? Life is too fast.
Life is too good. Life is, like, we've all got it too good. We've all got a big house and a white picket fence and four kids.
And a husband
and who it's plays not softball. A husband who plays softball and...
Yeah.
And it's so crazy. We've got it too good.
Right. And unlike the original episode, there's no person who gives her the watch.
No, she's like gardening and just like digs it up.
Right. And it's not a stopwatch.
It's like an amulet.
Right. But it looks like a little fucking sundial. It's got like a watch face, but then like a little like something protruding out of it.
Yeah, I guess it is like a little sundial.
Right. But it doesn't work like the in the original one, he stops the stopwatch. In this, she just has to be holding it and she has to tell you to stop or shut up.
Yeah, which is way more dynamic.
Right. Because when she first used it, all the kids and her husband are all screaming at her. The dog's barking. The fucking washing machine's going crazy. It's loud. And she's just like, well, everybody please shut up. And then everybody stops. And that's when she's like, whoa, what's happening here?
Yeah, and then she, and you're right, it does, you know what, you're right, it does get a little sexual, because then the first thing she does is she takes a bath.
But she also, like, she gets right up in her husband's face, like the fucking Joker menacing Maggie Gyllenhaal, while he's frozen, and it's like, Wes Craven must have been like, whoa, cut, what's happening here? What motivation are you finding here? It's just she is so she's so elated by the fact that she can stop time now. Like, and she uses it to fucking enjoy her life.
Yeah, there's a whole scene where she goes to the supermarket.
Yeah.
And you want to talk about like great people standing in place.
Yeah.
Like, this was really cool to watch.
Yeah. And
her moving people around, taking people's carts that are frozen.
Right. Because it's the 80s, and the 80s is all about consumerism. There's only one box left of, like, some fake chocolate cereal, like cocoa balls or whatever. And this one woman's like, I gotta get this because my kid wants it. And then our lead character, Penny, is like, well, my kid wants it too. And the other woman's like, well, too fucking bad. So Penny stops time, takes it out of the woman's hand, places some other cereal in her hand. And then walks around the supermarket. And unlike the original episode where they would have that ticking soundtrack that kind of made everything funny, in this one, there's an eerie silence and it plays much more scary.
Oh, yeah, because you're waiting for like something to happen.
Right, right.
And it's just in that scene turns out to like it has a lot of tension, but you're relieved that like nothing happens because all she does is just she takes her time. She gets her groceries. She thinks she's about to pay, and then she's like, no, I'm not going to pay. And then she just leaves.
No, she pays. She puts the money in the mouth
Oh, that's right.
Of the grocer. It's weird. She treats it in a... I wish they could have developed...
She's like a time dominatrix.
Yeah, like, once she stops time, she gets super, like, powerful. Like, she's like... getting to the point I made before, she goes outside of the supermarket, and there's a very handsome, like, 80s preppy guy. And she walks up to him, and she's, like, almost gonna touch his chest, and then she's like, no, I shouldn't. And then she, like, gets behind him and, like, almost cups his ass.
Yeah.
But then doesn't, but then just touches it. She just pokes his ass with her index finger, which is wild.
But she's testing the water. She's like, oh, I guess I could do this.
Yeah, right. She's like, well, I could stop time. I might as well start groping people.
Right.
Well, you know, might as well start. There's a background thing in this episode where they keep talking about the Cold War, and they keep talking about, which is very heavy handed to the point where, you know, it has to mean something eventually, because it's just, they keep hitting it too many times for you to not notice it. But like on the TV,
on the radio, when they're eating breakfast,
they're talking about talks between the United States and the Soviet Union to disarm their nuclear weapons, and how the talks are not going well. At one point, this was a weird scene. Two, like, well-meaning, what were they, like, politicians or protesters? Two well-meaning people come to her house wanting her to sign a petition about what's going on with the nuclear warheads. And she's kind of like, I don't have time for this. She's kind of shitty to them.
Yeah, almost like the power she's getting from being able to stop time puts her, like, above all the world's problems. But
yeah,
but at the same time, it's like, well, I don't know what she's going to do about all of this. Like, this is not...
Right, exactly.
Like, I don't know, honey, if this is under her purview.
Right, right. They, I mean, I'm thinking from 2020, mid-pandemic, so I'm thinking more in a woke way, where I think maybe the way they're trying to... I think the way that the episode is trying to frame it is, like, this is just more noise. This is just more fucking people coming to her house and fucking trying to take her time.
Right.
And this is the couple where she freezes them and, like, moves them.
Right.
She, like, lays them, but not far.
No, not far, but she does, like, now she's moving people.
Yeah. She lays them down on her lawn and then starts time again, and they both, like, realize they're on their back and are like, what the fuck just happened? All right, let's get out of it. Let's not go to this house.
Yeah.
She's taking a bath, and her husband's like, honey, come quick. And she's like, kind of annoyed, like, what? And, on the radio, Russia, they're attacking us. The nukes are entering American airspace. We can't believe it. It's going to happen. Here comes the end of the world. And this is kind of really upsetting. It's kind of triggering.
Oh no, it's absolutely triggering. Cause even though, you know, it's coming, because, like you said, they've given you, like, so many beats about it. It feels like, I don't know if out of place is the right word, but, like, it goes from being, like, a fairly comedic episode to having, like, real consequences, like,
right,
very quickly. Because
it feels off the tone.
Yeah, like, because now the husband's yelling, and, like, the washing machine is broken, too. It's like the washing machine is making noise.
Right.
Now the kids are, like, running in, and they don't know what's going on, so they're going out of control. Right.
Whereas everyone was loud before in a obnoxious, funny way, now they're all crying because the world is ending, and it's very sort of triggering.
Right.
The husband's crying, and the kids are like, oh, my God, everyone's freaking the fuck out, as you would.
Right.
I mean, it really taps into the Cold War fucking fear.
But it feels a little shoehorned in, but it is triggering because that's the end of the episode. So basically she redoes what happens at the beginning, only in a much more serious way.
Yeah.
Where everyone's making noise and she goes like, well, everyone just shut up.
Yeah.
And then everyone freezes and she, like, takes a minute. She, like, walks outside. You see it from, like, the ground level, and she, like, sees everyone frozen. And the last shot is she looks up, and then the camera pans out, and there's, like, a nuke, like, a skyscraper's length above the ground.
Right. It's, like, right there. It's, like, if she says, you know, unfreeze, that's it. So, like, she's in the same situation that Leonard's in, but he's in that situation because he broke the magical MacGuffin. And she's in that situation because if she undoes time, the world ends, which is quite a much different, scarier fate.
Yeah, exactly. Like, quite a different thing.
Yeah. It's pretty freaky. And I don't know if I said this, but, you know, this episode is it airs. This is the first episode of the 80s series, and it airs September 27th, 1985. So this is 1985. So the Cold War still happening, right? When does it officially end? 1991. So, you know, the fear's still there. And obviously, that's something Wes Craven, you know, if you listen to Wes Craven talk, he says that everything he ever did is about Cold War anxiety, from like Freddy to the, you know, Last House on the Left and all that. So you've got that there. And it's just that last image. I believe the last image of the episode is just the fucking, the nuke in the air.
Yeah.
It's pretty. Yeah,
it's a big, like, oh shit. Like, you just realize at that moment, like, oh, so she unfreezes time. That's just it.
Right. It's pretty fucked up. That's the good thing about, I think, Twilight Zone episodes are a lot of them, like, there could be more story. Like, what's the rest of this woman's life going to be? Just, you know, like, walking around, you know, in the middle of nothing, everyone frozen.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what do you, like, what do you do?
Yeah.
Like, Leonard can just go and, like, he can make a sandwich. You can go, you know, do whatever he wants.
Right, right.
Someone else that's frozen. But, right. Like, she, I don't know how she gets out of this one.
Yeah, it's also a big difference is if after years and years of being stuck alone, they both start to get crazy. Leonard can't do anything. His watch is broke. So it doesn't matter what happens. He can't do anything. But she might get to a point where she's so miserable and so alone that she's like, fuck it. I don't care. I'm going to end the world. Like she has the power in her hands where he doesn't.
Well, really, would you want to give Leonard that power?
Oh, God, no. Of course not.
There you go.
You know, I've only seen a handful of episodes, but I feel like in general, people sleep on the 80s Twilight Zone.
Oh, yeah. Like, did you, because I know you went back and watched this one, and like you said before, it's part of the first episode. Did you watch the actual first episode?
No, I know that the first story starred Bruce Willis. I did not get a chance to watch it, but I kind of want to go back and watch all of this now.
Yeah, it's not bad. And that first episode is really good. The one of Bruce Willis. It basically, the episode starts with him at a bar waiting for a girl, and he gets a phone call, and the person who's calling him is him from his apartment. And he's like, wait a minute, what's going on here? They're both very confused. And then you basically learn that there was like some sort of like cosmic lightning storm,
mm-hmm.
and like half of like the basically like the bad half of Bruce Willis like broke off.
Yeah.
So there's like two Bruce Willises running around.
This is also directed by Wes Craven.
It was also directed by Wes Craven and written by Harlan Ellison.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah, there was a lot of talent behind the 80s Twilight Zone.
One that sticks out in my mind, I think it was the first 80s one I saw, was I forget what it's called, but it's about this kid whose grandma is like a witch, and it was written by Stephen King.
Mm.
And I know George R.R. Martin, the creator of Game of Thrones, wrote for them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cool stuff there. I wonder if, because, you know, there's a current one that's on CBS All Access, the Jordan Peele one. And then there was the early 2000s version where Forrest Whitaker was the host. And I wonder if, it seems like the more recent ones try super, super hard to homage the originals. Whereas it seems like the 80s one, from what I've seen, isn't trying to be identical to the original version.
No, it's just got the spirit. Like, they do a couple episodes that, again, like, either take an idea from the original, or they did a full-on sequel one to The Boy That Can Control Reality.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But in general, it more just, like, keeps the spirit. And I think that's what the new series is lacking a little bit of. It's paying a little too much of an homage. Like, Jordan Peele does the intros to them, but he does them like Rod Sterling.
Right, right, yeah. Who, by the way, I love him smoking. Like, in the original episode with McNulty, Leonard, You know, he's there and he's smoking, and it's like, I mean, like, I don't know what you are. You're some omniscient narrator, but I like that you're also a smoker. Like, wherever you exist, you're also like, yeah, smoke up. It doesn't matter. I'm not real. These were really cool episodes. Thank you for suggesting them.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Any final thoughts?
Again, I would tell people, if you want to check at least the 80s episode out, like, they're all on YouTube. They've been up for years. Nobody's taken them down.
Yeah, they are.
Like, the entire 80s run is on YouTube.
Yeah. And the original Twilight Zone is on Hulu. And they're really good transfers. Like, they're really clean. They're like, they look really nice on Hulu.
Yeah.
So, and that's a great way to start your new year. And I hope you have a good 2021.
Yeah, I hope you all get vaccinated.
You fucking bet. All right, everybody. This has been PCMC. I'm Mike Bergeron. I'm joined with Vin Forte. Vin, the host of Split City.
Yeah, and Wrestle Rap.
And Wrestle Rap. He's all over. Tell me about Split City. It's about the basketball?
It is about the basketballs. I just did a two-part episode with the writer of the NBA Jam book. So if you're not only into basketball, but if you're into video games or 90s pop culture, that's a good entry point. You don't even really need to know about basketball for that one.
There you go. We end every episode by saying, go bye-bye.